Welcome back to Unleashed. And remember, we are the Resistance, and we are so glad that you are here. And this is episode 42.
All right.
We hit that 40 mark. We had planned from the very beginning. We said we got to make sure if we hit 40, we're going to be in this.
Yeah.
We did it.
We did it.
I love it when you set a goal, you know, when you make it. Because a lot of times I was reading about podcasts, and most podcasts that start out only get like 5 episodes or less, and they just quit.
Yeah, it's like, hey, I'm not instantly famous. I don't have 10,000 listeners, you know? I mean, we've been fairly fortunate that we found an audience fairly quick, but...
And it's a lot of work. I mean, people don't realize you don't just come here and just sit down and just start talking. I mean, there's that element. Like right now, you and I are sitting here just having a conversation, and you even said, hey, man, let's just kind of go into the podcast and kind of start it off with, you know, where each other is in our life right now, what we've been doing. So it's not too scripted, but, you know, you do have to get together and plan content. You know, what are you going to be saying? What's relevant to where people are right now, not 10, 20 years ago? Although that comes into the conversation a lot of times because you, like I've said before, we tell our stories and to see where we are now and what God has done. But anyhow,
I did want to give it. So as you were saying that, I pulled up the analytics real quick. Unfortunately, it does not give the city. It says city NA. I don't understand that. But whoever you are in India, thank you. Someone in India, it's actually our third most listened to.
Wow.
Yeah, but it doesn't give a city. So
how cool is that?
Yeah, man. I just so whoever you are, thank you. South Africa is up there too. That one, Pretoria.
Oh yeah, Pretoria. Yep.
Okay. Yep. Somebody
yep, been there.
Yep. So
it's amazing. I pulled up the analytics. I pull them up a lot to see kind of like how long people are listening, what we need to change, and where they're coming from. But seeing the map with the little orange dots that you can see on this.
Oh, yeah, it's cool.
It's all over the world.
Why don't you do a screenshot and show everybody?
I did that. You didn't see it on Facebook. I did that maybe a month ago, but it would be great to do a new one because it's always growing.
Right. I love it.
Yeah, we'll keep everybody updated. So, well, man, hey, the squirrel thing that we got all the – we had a – you know, Eric here had a problem with squirrels chewing the wires and stuff in his vehicle. And he said, man, put it out there on social media. See if anybody has any – we'll call it Squirrel Solutions. I said we should start a new company.
Squirrel Solutions.
Squirrel Solutions. Squirrel Solutions. But what did you – did you try anything yet, or are you still kind of like compiling all this?
No, I dove right in. I did like 3 or 4 of the things that people had suggested, including, now one guy said the bar of soap was just for mice and stuff, which it's squirrels. Cause I see those little, there's just one chubby one. He's my main suspect, by the way. But I've mixed up some of the solutions. They said mix up the bar of soap. I bought a fake owl and set out there and,
oh, well, yeah.
Yep. And as of now, it has stopped.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't have to resort to the pellet gun. So far, so good.
That little chubby one, though, I still may pellet gun him just to, you know.
My nephew Travis had posted on this thing about how do you get rid of these squirrels. And he said, you know, there's not much different from like rodents. He says, what would you do if it was a rat? And I said, I'd probably get my .30-06 out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hate rats. Oh, what else was I going to ask you about this?
Bike riding.
Well, first of all, have you seen those little squirrel, like these little like weighted things that squirrels, like when they get down to eat something, like you don't want them to eat, it's like it's set up to be almost like a slingshot.
Mm.
And when they get on it, like if they do something, it sends them flying, you know, 20 yards through the air.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. You can see them like on YouTube and some of these reels and stuff. It's pretty funny.
That'd be sitting there, you know, watching TV in the peripheral vision, you see squirrels launching through the
air.
That'll teach them.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll teach them. Maybe get them a little parachute in case they can, you know, say glide down carefully. But
sure.
Bike riding, you mentioned. How's that coming?
Okay. So I told everyone I would get 1,000 by the end of the year. I started out with like 475 or kind of coming into it. I'm like 505 now. So I have passed the 500-mile mark, so
all right,
I'm
good
halfway.
Deal.
That's a lot of riding now I think about it. 500 miles.
But yeah, it is. And you're only in the end of April.
Yeah.
What is today, April 29th?
29th. So I have from now until, I guess, snow and ice to nail this thing down. So
I love it when we set goals. You know, and today's podcast is going to be about when your hopes and dreams are crushed. And I think a lot of us, we do set goals because I think that motivates us.
Mm-hmm.
And the key around that, I think you and I've talked about this, is just you got to find the time, but you got to be disciplined to make the time.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the keys with this. I was telling you last week that I had kind of done this little thing. There's a magazine that's been out for years called Muscle and Fitness. And, you know, when I was a kid growing up, I was the 98-pound weakling that always got picked on and bullied. And I kind of just really kind of stayed, you know, around that 135 to 150 pounds in my life until I was like out of college. And I decided I was done with that. I had some goals I wanted to set. And so I started working out. But I didn't get serious about it until I was 48 years old. That would have been, when would that have been? 2009? I think I started in the April of 2009. And I didn't get serious about it until I found out I had diabetes about 2 years ago. And as you and I were talking last week afterwards, I said, man, I did this thing. And my wife, Stacy, posted it. I wasn't going to post it, but she posted it on Facebook that I had done this thing. And I'd seen this competition coming up for this Muscle and Fitness magazine, and she said, you ought to do that. And I said, oh, I don't know. And so I got on there, and I sent in a few things. And it's funny, I was kind of worried. I said to her, I was turkey hunting this last Thursday and Friday when she did it. And I said, you know, I kind of wonder sometimes how some people will take it, because they know me from being out there and speaking, you know, doing a lot of Christian events, game dinners, retreats, stuff, and in churches. And she said, well, that's not your issue. That's their issue if they struggle with that. And so when she posted it about doing this, it lit up with all these people saying, man, what a great avenue to reach men. Because so many guys, you know, like you're wanting to set these goals for biking.
Yeah.
And I've got goals, you know, with the diabetes thing. And, you know, I'm 63 years old now, and I'm probably in better shape now than I was when I was 33. And it's possible. You know, we have to have dreams, and, you know, they can get crushed, and it can throw us off when we set a goal or something happens, especially when it's out of our control. We want to quit. Let me say something. Don't quit. Allow those things to drive you to become better than you've ever been. But you got to find the discipline. That's the motivation behind it, but discipline comes first. So, all right. Well, anyhow, enough of that. Let's get into this episode, When Your Hopes and Dreams Are Crushed. So, well, let me ask you this first. I was going to say this to you as well. You know, I went to go see a movie over the weekend with Stacy called Unsung Hero. It was amazing. But I was wondering, do you like movies, or what genres, or what do you like?
I usually wait till they come out streaming. And I think the last movie I was kind of really looking forward to was the latest Indiana Jones, and I did not love it. So
yeah, it was the same way.
Yeah.
The original one's the one that hooked most of us.
Mm-hmm.
Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes?
That's right.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's I don't even know what the next one coming out I'm really gonna want to see.
So you're an adventure kind of a movie guy?
Yeah, I think primarily.
Yeah. Occasionally I like a good comedy. I do love a good jump scare.
Yeah.
And I like jump scares, not for me. I like watching like Stacy and Sophie and Emma or whatever, as they, you know, something happens and they just scream or jump, and I sit there and just laugh my head off. But I love inspiration. There's something about when you see someone who overcomes something that has really wrecked their life. Do you remember what show was it? Was it American Idol or one of those? And there was a woman on there, her name was Susan Boyle.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think a lot of you guys, maybe you go back and watch the reels of her sometimes, because when she steps up there, she's not the person you would expect to see like on the cover of a glamour magazine.
No.
You know, like a lot of singers are.
They were laughing at her. Yeah.
And when she opened her mouth.
Unbelievable.
I feel it right now.
Yeah. Just put a link up to the YouTube for that
this.
Yeah, because most people probably heard it, but.
Well, and coming back, you know, when I signed up for this, it's kind of connected to that muscle and fitness thing. They asked me questions for my biography, and the voting starts on this May 6th. So if you put in my name, and you'll find it on that, or maybe I'll put a link one of these times in that. But one of the questions was about, you know, what motivates you to want to exercise and stay fit? And I think for me, you know, again, being that little kid that was always kind of picked on, I found some place to draw from. Not that my worth and value comes from that at all, but every one of us looks in the mirror every day. And we want to be happy with what we're seeing. And there's seasons where we aren't. And so when we hit those things, we don't let them knock us down. You tell me I can't, and I will prove you wrong. I mean, that's one of the motivations for me, is that I will get back up again. You knock me down, I'll get up twice as fast next time. That's the kind of attitude that will carry us through. And again, it's not because I'm going to necessarily prove you wrong. It's because, first of all, my identity doesn't come from you. And when I have the God of the universe in me, I really believe, my mother used to tell me this, honey, there's nothing you can't do when God is in it. You put your mind to it and you do it. And I have never forgotten that. So coming back to the movie, because that's connected too, this Unsung Hero movie was about a guy down in Australia. His name was David Smallbone, and he had a music company, and it went under, and he lost like everything he had. I think at the time it was like $500,000. And he moves his family from Australia to the United States, and he's trying to, you know, build a brighter future for his family and his career. And when they get there, he had a deal worked out with Carmen. They kind of tell you some of these music artists, and it fell through. And here they are at this house they had moved into. It has no furniture. They have no car. What he thought was just going to support his family is now gone. And they are struggling to make ends meet. And, you know, the couple, the husband and wife, soon realize that the talents of their children, who go on to become two of the most successful acts in contemporary music, was kind of the motivation of how they were able to look to the future, to set goals, to help others. And it was crazy because his goal in the beginning was he thought he was moving here to his family to have a better life, and everything falls through. And so he's out like mowing grass or something, and his kids are helping trim up this terrible yard of this new house they moved into with, again, no furniture, nothing, no job. And someone sees them doing this, and they said, hey, would you come over and do my yard? What would you charge? Well, they were looking for a way to make money, and they just said, let's do our family. We'll start doing that. So it ends up, they end up, do you remember the band? I don't know if you remember this, probably before your time. It was DeGarmo and Key. Did you ever hear of that band?
I have never heard of that ever.
Yeah. When I was with Stephen Curtis Chapman, we used to listen to DeGarmo and Key all the time when we were in the van. That's how we started, you know, before buses, we were doing the van stuff. And we would listen to them. Well, he's washing, you know, toilets out in people's houses and doing all this stuff. And he's got his daughter with him. And they end up at Eddie DeGarmo's house. And he didn't know it was his house. It's his beautiful big home. And when he walks in, he realizes Eddie DeGarmo was one of the men who he was hoping to get a job with that said no. And now he's washing his toilets. And this guy used to be one of the biggest. He was promoting Amy Grant. So there's kind of a setup. You want to go see the movie. It's really inspirational. If you want to see a family that comes together, works hard, prays together, it is absolutely worth going. So, but when your hopes and dreams are crushed, I was watching this movie through a lens probably different than most people, because that was my world for many years. You know, I was in the music business, the Christian music business, from about probably 1985, 84-ish. You know, I started off as a studio singer for a lot of years, and I was doing a lot of commercials for radio and television, like Coca-Cola and AT&T and different things. And then I got into, I was touring with a guy named, Steve Chapman, and became Stephen Curtis Chapman. And we had a band called the Chapman Henderson Band. And, you know, I started off with a band called Exodus. When I was in college at Anderson College, now Anderson University, I had a band that I got together with some buddies. We called Exodus. And we were kind of hoping that they were going to send us out like in some of these vans and help support us in the summertime to travel for the college, you know, to try to get students to want to come. And they told us, you guys are too rock and roll for us. And that was like the beginning of me feeling like, wow, it's how you look rather than, you know, who you are and what you have to say. And but that's the way it kind of was, you know, back in the 80s. A lot of people were kind of afraid of cutting edge Christian music. And then later on, they would say, wow, we can see how it's beginning to reach so many young people. But so we toured together for about 2.5 years. I was in Steve's wedding in October of 1984. And at the end of that summer, we went down to Nashville. There was some record execs that had met with us, and they were talking about doing a recording. But we all know Steve was one of the most, and is the most gifted songwriter that there's probably been in Christian music. He's got more Dove Awards and Grammys than any other Christian, and more number one artists than any other Christian artist. And even artists in the world. I mean, I forget how many he's got number ones, but it's a crazy amount. But I had hopes and dreams, you know, when we were traveling and realizing, you know, we were good. We went to Pigeon Forge and got into this band competition, and it was the semifinal round when we actually got in. It was a last-minute deal, and it was going to be a recording contract and an appearance on Star Search with Ed McMahon at the time. Well, we won the semifinal round. Well, the finals were going to be 2 weeks later, and we realized we had to be in Texas on tour. We couldn't do it. So it went over to another band, and that band won the whole thing, became one of the big top-selling country artists, you know, back at that time. And so my hopes and dreams, you know, you kind of have these goals you set out there because of circumstances just kind of fell apart. And so at the end of that summer, we go down to Nashville, and I'm thinking, you know, maybe we're going to get the band, you know, this record deal and everything. But Steve and his songwriting abilities and his talents as a guitar player and a singer and all this stuff, really personable, love God. He decided to go ahead and stay in Nashville and not come back to the college where we were going. And I went ahead and stayed at the college rather than pursuing it, going to Nashville with him. And you all know the rest of the story with that. And, you know, I can't look back and go, wow, you know, almost like the what ifs, because God had a plan. But I found myself kind of going, well, God, what about my plan? You know, I worked so hard. And my mom, just like the mom in that movie, Unsung Hero, was kind of the foundation underneath that family that kept them going. When the father kept losing job after job and it was depressed and going through so many things, it was the mom who kind of held everything together. And, you know, my mom would call me back on the phone and she'd say, honey, remember what I've always told you. You can do anything you put your mind to when God is in it. So I get back to school and I get together with two other guys. We formed a group, a singing group called One. And what was really interesting was Sandy Patty at that time was the biggest Christian artist, bigger than Amy Grant was at the time. And she was the female vocalist of the year, artist of the year, all this stuff. And Steve and I had co-written a song called Give Him the Glory, and it was mostly Steve's song. But while I was in school that next fall, the Grammy Awards happened to be playing, and Sandy won that year. And they always play a song from your album when you win. And it was that song, and it was the part of the song that I had written. And I'm sitting there going, wow, okay, God is this kind of one of those signs that keep pursuing my dreams. So get this band called together called One. And Sandy, we had only been together as a band for like 2 weeks. And we do a concert at this little hall called Byram Hall in Anderson, Indiana. And we didn't know it, but she came to see us that night. Well, afterwards, we had produced a little, because we were going to be producing, I think what the whole deal was, with a guy who was good friends and actually had produced Sandy at one of her first projects. He comes to our dressing room afterwards and he says, hey, Sandy was here tonight and she needs a new backup group. First Call, who had been singing with her and backing her up, were leaving. And would you be interested? We all kind of looked at each other and said, let's pray about that. Okay, we're in. I mean, it was that fast. We're thinking this is the biggest platform we'll ever have. So we start singing with her. We did the Make His Praise Glorious tour, and then another time, another place. And we were all over the world. You know, we're in the Orient. You know, we're singing at the Budokan in Tokyo. We did there's the Tonight Show in California that she was doing, and Nashville Now and Radio City Music Hall, the Fox Theaters, just awesome stuff. I can remember signing my autograph on the wall next to some of these big bands like the Monkees, you know, and I'm sitting here thinking, okay, my dreams, my hopes and dreams are moving forward here. And so we're out there on tour for about 5 years, and then it all comes crashing down. You know, this is public. I'm not saying anything that I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus. You know, Sandy went through a painful divorce. And, you know, the group that I was with, we stopped touring, all that stuff. And here we had the largest platform in the Christian music industry. Every night we were going out and being able to sing our songs and then sing with her. And our sales were going really great. When we were out there, we were just selling a lot of CDs. And then everything came crashing down. And I'm off the road. I'm back home again. And I'm like going, God, you know, I've done all this work. And it wasn't something that how would you say it? It was something because of other circumstances that it all fell apart. And here, once again, I'm off the road and I had come this far going, God, what in the world? You know, what do I do with all this stuff? You know, it's difficult because I can go back in my story and remember, you know, after I graduated high school, you know, I played piano. You weren't popular if you were a musician in high school. It was more the athletes. You're kind of quiet about being a musician because in Pennsylvania, it was like the football and wrestling and stuff that was really big. And I had moved away from home almost 3 hours away. And I was in this little town called Emporia, Pennsylvania, in the middle of nowhere. And I was praying. I said, God, you know, I do love doing music, but I don't know what to do here. And I get this guy come in the door one day, and he says, he didn't know me from Adam. And he goes, hey, do you know anybody that plays piano? I'm like, well, yeah, I do. He says, well, we're looking for someone to be like playing in our midweek service. And I said, yeah, you know, I'm not looking for like playing in a service. I just miss playing the piano. And he says, I'll tell you what. You come over anytime after you get off work and you can have access to the piano in the church. You go in and you just play until you're done. Well, I felt that was kind of a, you know, an answer to prayer. It was. And I had been playing with a group, you know, like right after I graduated, it was called Bittersweet was the name of the band. And they called me and they said, hey, we haven't seen you in a while, but we got this opportunity to play for the Danny Thomas Telethon up in Olean, New York. Well, that was like an hour away from where I was living. And I had been praying for this and boom, it happens. Then someone comes in, they give me this guidepost. Maybe some of you remember that Christian magazine. And on the cover was this guy named Tom Netherton, and it was his story in music. And it related really similarly to my experience. And so, you know, when everything fell apart, we always go back and we look at God's plan and his faithfulness. You know, here I had been starting off in music. And it kept growing, and then it would seem like everything would just fall apart. And then you grow more and more, and it would fall apart. And so after I was done touring with Sandy in the group one, about maybe 2 years later, I got a record deal, and I recorded my first solo project. And it was called Brother to Brother. And what was so disappointing was the record label that first took me on, after everything was done, they said, you know what, we're not going to do the record with you. If you see this movie we just talked about this last weekend, Unsung Hero, you can relate to the one young girl was Rebecca St. James. You know, she's told she's going to get a record deal, and then it just says they changed their mind. We can't do it. Well, the reason why, and this is where I started kind of getting a little bit tainted towards some of the Christian music industry, is because I was told the reason was that my hair was too long, for real. Remember that song that said, if your hair is too long, there's sin in your heart? It was kind of one of those deals. And I'm like, are you serious? So I end up getting with another record label. And, you know, here we go again. I felt my hopes and dreams have been crushed. And I was able to get out and record, had several top 10, you know, songs come off of that. And then record label comes back and takes me. And I get out on tour with Crystal Lewis and Avalon. It was the gold tour. It was one of the biggest tours going on. And I got to be the opener. And you know what's funny is I had the number one song in the country while I was on tour with them. It was when Avalon came out with Testify to Love. I would get done singing. I go past the mic backstage and they start off with, you know, that song. But almost every single night, the MC who would be opening up the event would mispronounce my name. He'd call me Brent Hendrickson, Bart Henson, you know, Brant Anderson. I mean, it was a big joke, you know, after we get off stage, because it was like, here I am with the number one song in the country. And even then they couldn't pronounce my name or didn't remember it. That was in 98. So I get off that tour. At the time, we had our second child. And so when I'm off the road now and with the second, because I really felt that I was supposed to be going back home and taking care of my kids. I think that was a calling. But the thing was, when I left, you know, it was, I once was out there singing my number one song, No One Speaks Your Name Like Jesus. But now that I'm at home and no one's asking for an autograph or whatever, instead of it being No One Speaks Your Name Like Jesus, I felt like it was No One Knows Your Name But Jesus. He's the only one that remembers you now. And so when this happened, I was doing, you know, some pretty humbling stuff, kind of like the guy in the Unsung Hero movie. You know, he was, you know, cutting grass and doing, you know, washing out toilets and bathrooms. And I was out, you know, painting houses and cleaning out gutters and putting in sidewalks, you know, just to be able to make enough, you know, money at the end of the day to, you know, go get milk and bread and diapers, you know, for the new baby and everything. So, you know, I did that for a few years. And then I ended up taking a church job. It was about 400 miles away. I had been called by like, you know, 20 churches a year after I was on tour. Hey, we'd love to have you. You're not on the road anymore. And I wasn't looking to do that. But it finally came down to, you know, I needed to support my family. And this was going back to an area where I grew up. So I was like, yeah, I will definitely come back and take the job. But the problem is when you have been out there for so long on the big stages, you know, where you're singing in front of 10,000 people a night, you don't realize you're beginning to get what I like a performance addiction. And it's, you know, do people like the way I sound? Did they like my songs? Are they buying them? Will they ask for your autograph? And you try to die to it, but you still begin to feel that stuff. And when I went to the church, there was some of that yuck still inside of me. And I don't even know that I guess I kind of did know it, but I was trying to swallow hard and kind of get rid of it. But having others know your name, it can be a drug. And here's what happens. You find yourself vulnerable to that performance addiction. And within maybe four and a half years after that, you know, I'd end up falling prey, you know, to the alluring words of another woman. And shortly after that, I would resign. And again, you heard me say this before. It wasn't a sexual relationship. It was an emotional relationship, but it was absolutely sin. And I had to get up and read my letter of repentance in front of about 1,500 people, you know, to confess that short-lived, you know, emotional relationship. And that knocked me down like nothing I'd ever had. Because here we go again. I've left all this other world. I'm trying to go and I love the people there. I wanted to serve. But my choices this time, rather than somebody else's choices, you know, were the thing that brought me down. I was totally humiliated. But again, this time it was from my choice, not somebody else's. And I've shared this, you know, I came within maybe a month after all this stuff happened. I came within seconds of taking my own life. Well, it's all because I was getting my worth and value from everybody else around me and by my own performance. So, you know, over the next few years, you know, God led me to a man who'd walk me back to health. And I started working on a book and DVD series for men with another guy. That I had dreamed of doing this book and DVD series years before when I had gone to see John Eldridge out in Colorado with the Wild at Heart retreat. And this guy that I had connected with was someone that loved the outdoors as much as I did. So I invited him to be a part of those dreams and visions, you know, for men's ministry that I'd started. And we began, you know, writing together, and I had started doing a book, but we started doing it together and we were speaking together and we were filming everywhere. I'm all over the place. And within only a few years, everything came crashing down. And we had a signed contract. He sent it back to me. He voided it, said that it didn't work for him. And after voiding the contract, you know, he had another guy come and edit the book that I had brought him into. And he added all kinds of stuff in the book that wasn't part of the original. You know, and after that whole thing was done, you know, there were thousands of books ordered. And it was difficult because I wasn't a part of that on a project that I started. And when it came time to be able to get the books, you know, I was being asked to pay twice the price of what the books actually cost. And I'm going, this is not right because, man, I started this whole thing. And here, once again, I felt like all of my hopes and dreams came crashing down. And I couldn't understand it. I'm like, God, what in the world? And it was pride that would end up getting in the way of us working together anymore. That was tough. I think the hardest part of that all was the loss of that close friendship, because that's what happens. You start off with something like with great hearts, like so many things do, but money can get in the way of stuff. Just like in the movie Unsung Hero, it can get in the way and, you can have your hopes and dreams crushed. Well, about the same time, as that, the project and friendship came to an unfortunate end, he and I were speaking for an event up in Canada, and it ended up being our very last event together. My parents were in a terrible car accident, and over the next few months, you know, I'd be traveling back and forth to Florida and Pennsylvania, you know, visiting my parents, going to rehab centers, and with only a few months, you know, after this, I was attending both of their funerals. And at the funerals, you know, the songs that I had once written about the love that I had, you know, for my family, you know, that were on the radio, you know, those songs that we played at the funeral, including one that I had written when I was with a group called One, and it was called I'm Going Home. Now, you can go on YouTube and you can just put that in, you know, I'm Going Home, and then just put the group One or whatever. It's one of the most moving songs you will ever hear. And it's been downloaded so many times for people to use for different funerals. You know, when your hopes and dreams get crushed, so many times we lean on those words and music that can take us to a place, you know, where we feel safe and cared for. And when that song was played, you know, when they carried both my parents' funerals, when they carried the casket out, I was sobbing like a baby. Because I had always wanted my parents to see me succeed. And on every, it seemed like every front that I tried, everything just kept falling through. You know, it left me feeling broken. You know, I felt betrayed. I was humiliated. And honestly, I felt invisible. It's like, you know, again, you know, no one speaks your name like Jesus was the song, but it became no one knows your name but Jesus. And the message of my wounds that I was suffering, you're not good enough. And just, it was about 10 days after my mother passed. I spoke for a retreat down in Texas. I think it was Austin. And I had been invited to be the speaker for this retreat by the former president of Promise Keepers, R.T. Phillips. And by the way, I just talked with him recently. We're going to have him on the podcast coming up. That will be an episode you will not want to miss. But after the retreat, you know, R.T. took me to lunch and he said to me, he says, Brent, I have heard a lot of men speak at Promise Keeper events over the years. He says, the best speakers in the country. And he said, this message that you just shared with our guys might be the most powerful message I have ever heard. And then he said, you know, what are you doing with all these stories and teaching? So I told him my story about what had happened with the man, you know, I'd worked with for almost the past decade, you know, and how I kind of folded up my computer after that. And I kind of just put my writing aside. And he said, I'll never forget it. We were at lunch together. And he said, I want to encourage you to get writing again. He said, men need to hear this message now more than ever. So for the next 2 years, I'd write what would eventually become the book before this last one called Into the Wilds, and it was released with Whitaker House Publishers. You can find that you know, on Amazon or wherever as well. But then one of the most tragic things I've ever experienced in my life happened, and I ended up going through a painful divorce that would change everything I'd known for almost 30 years. You know, once again, I found myself curled up in a ball. You know, I was on the bedroom floor, and I was wanting to die. And honestly, I think one of the hardest things in any divorce, you know, God forbid, is that you not only lose so many friends because they don't know what to do or to say or they take sides, but you lose family members that you love dearly, that your kids will be connected with the rest of their life, but you won't. And I'm telling you, and many of you out there know exactly what I'm talking about, it'll tear you apart for years to come. It's not something that you get over overnight. You know, it's not, you don't get over it that quick. Again, you know, the hopes and dreams you had going into that part of your life will come crashing down, and it's not pretty. And honestly, it's a ripping and a tearing. So for those of you who have been through that and you understand what I'm talking about, you got to keep looking forward. You have to keep looking forward. Stay connected with the present. Stay connected with a band of brothers. Stay connected with your church, whatever it takes, and have people keep reminding you who you really are and that God loves you no matter what. Well, about a year and a half later, you know, I'd ended up getting remarried. You know, if I could go back now, would I have waited? Maybe. You know, I've asked my kids that before, if that was really hard for them. And they're like, no, Dad, that was fine. We understood. But, you know, I'd ended up getting married and to the person who I absolutely adore. Her name is Stacy, and you've heard me talk about it. She's been on the podcast before. But she didn't know my story much, you know, when we first started seeing each other. And so our first public date, which, you know, we went and had coffee a few times, but the first public one was down at, I forget what it was called at that point, but it's now Bankers Life. It's where the Indiana Pacers play. And Stephen Curtis Chapman was going to be performing that night. And so I take her, you know, I've got backstage passes, and we go back, and we're sitting out in the crowd, like in the 10th row, had great seats. You know, there's tons, there's thousands and thousands of people. Well, Steve starts talking to me from stage, and then he runs down with the microphone. He's trying to get me to sing with him and all this stuff. And I'm just kind of really uncomfortable. And she's looking at me like, what is up with this? And I get out of there quick. You know, we get in the car. And she asked me on the way home, she says, you know, what was up with that? And I said, you know, I was so worried because after being, you know, I performed in these big halls when I was with the group one and with Sandy. And to be here now, sitting out here, knowing that I once was with Stephen Curtis Chapman, and seeing here I am sitting out here now and broken, you know, divorced, all these different things, I felt less than. And I just wanted to get away from it because my heart was broken, because all my hopes and dreams to be doing that someday were crushed. And so, you know, the next morning, you know, I've told the story before, but she went and bought a piano for me so that I would start getting back into music again. I mean, who does that? And, you know, I fell in love with her. I mean, that was it. She wanted to know my heart and wanted me to reengage, you know, not just with my music, but with my heart. And so she encouraged me, and I went and wrote the next book called The Roar Within, which many of you have read. I get guys all the time saying it is the best men's book they've ever read. Well, that's God thing. But after we got married, we returned from the honeymoon to go see Stephen Curtis Chapman. He was playing at Reardon Auditorium in our hometown. It seats maybe, I don't know, 2,000 people or something. And once again, Steve knew I was there, and he calls me out from stage. And, you know, Stacy's like proud of her husband. Well, I'm sinking down in my chair. I don't want anybody to know I'm there, because I was afraid that people were looking at me, and I didn't need just one more person to give me, you know, a disgusted look or to feel judged. They didn't know my story. They didn't know what had happened. And I wasn't about to stand up and tell everybody, because it honestly, it wasn't any of their business. But after that night, you know, it was a couple year process of picking up the pieces again. You know, the event started to pick up again. I was feeling hopeful. I had dreams and visions again of what could happen. And, you know, I wrote that book, The Roar Within, but then COVID hits, and Baker Books gets a hold of me and says, hey, we're not going to be able to release that book for another year. Well, not only did all my speaking events cancel because of social distancing, now the book wasn't coming out, which would launch more speaking events. And I'm like, seriously? You know, another thing, you know, it's out of my control, pulling the rug out from under me, that I had worked so hard. And once again, everything I've been working for, you know, my hopes and dreams would be dashed. Well, after several months of not knowing, you know, what to do for a job, I once again had to go and do something else. I felt just like this movie, this unsung hero, where you're having to do things that you didn't sign up for. And music was something I really didn't want to go back into. You know, my heart had been kind of crushed, and I had been hurt, you know, through some things within the church, the way things maybe have been handled. And I get this call to be a worship leader for $1,000 a month. Well, I didn't want to go stocking shelves, you know, at some place, or pumping gas someplace if they still do that. Well, I went ahead and took it, and you know, $1,000 a month, that's not even half of like what the poverty level income is. And I, you know, I thought by this time of my life, you know, I'd be set by now. But after having so many things fall through, I was once again, you know, broke. You know, I wondered if God was moving me out of men's ministry. And I don't know how God did it. But that year, after all was said and done, I get this, I ended up making more money than I had the year before when I was busy speaking. And it wasn't a lot of money, but it absolutely covered every bill we had, all of them. Well, over the next couple of years, God would bring others, you know, to let us know that we were to stay the course, you know, don't give up, and that God's going to provide, because it's obvious he's given you a gift to communicate, and especially with men, and to help them, you know, find their purpose, to keep moving forward in their life when they get beaten down. Well, you know, because of the economy, you know, over the last 3 years, bringing this current now as we kind of get ready to wind down here in a minute. You know, the economy over the last 3 years has been awful. My speaking events have gone down considerably. And it was weird because I thought the podcast would honestly, you know, launch more speaking events. And I have a booking agent in Nashville as well with the Mitchell Group, Stormy Mitchell. And I called him and I said, man, you know, the word of mouth events that I usually do have really slowed down. How are things there? And he said, yeah, things have definitely been slow. You know, the economy has really slowed. But, you know, my wife believed in me. You know, she told me to stay the course, to keep moving. And so what it's done is, you know, together we've seen God come through so many times, which has strengthened our faith in God. And just like in that movie, Unsung Hero, it strengthened, you know, the love that we have for one another. And that movie, we went to go see over the weekend. You know, it helped open my eyes to the love that both my wife and God, you know, has for me. You know, even when Stacy has been scared, you know, to where the next money is going to be come from, God has always made a way. Even as I was writing this podcast this morning, a man called me who saw me speak in Muncie like a week and a half ago or whatever, and he asked me to come speak to his men later this month. I mean, I only had one booking for the month of May, and I wasn't sure what was going to happen. 3 weeks away, he calls me for this. He goes, "Don't worry about it. We're going to take care of you financially." He says, "Don't worry about it. We got this covered." Well, who else but God? And you know, what's funny is I didn't give him a price because Stacy and I felt like we were going to start trusting God and saying, you know what, if you want us to be there and you feel God is moving us to be there, we're going to be coming there no matter what. And here it is. As soon as we started praying and asked God to do that, he comes through and does it. You know, even without cost, if I can get this message out there, that is absolutely the most important, you know, thing to me. And, you know, that's what I love about the Unleashed podcast is it goes out there, like we said earlier, all over the world. You can see the map, and I'll post that on Facebook if you guys want to check it out on my Facebook feed. Just go to Brent Henderson. You'll find me on there. But it's getting the message out there to thousands and thousands of people everywhere. And so after we saw that movie this weekend, Stacy and I were praying about, you know, the lack of events, and it helped us realize how important doing this podcast is, you know, to encourage and bring hope and life to those that need to hear it most. You know, I have never asked for people to give financially to help this ministry. I was uncomfortable to do it, and I was challenged by a few people just recently that asked me, you know, knowing that the events were slowing down, is it your pride that's kind of gotten in the way, you know, to be asking, you know, others for their support? Because that's what pastors do in their church. That's what radio stations do. Yeah, maybe. You know, maybe I'm thinking it's got to be something that I earn. And someone reminded me, they said, "Brent, you're touching lives. And there are so many people out there that are being touched, whether you're speaking event or your podcast or one-on-ones, that they want to be a part of supporting you." And so what I want to do is I want you to invite you to be a part of what God is doing through this podcast. You know, especially since so many churches can't do, you know, events anymore because they're having a hard time paying their own bills and their staff. You know, I had a church tell me the other day, and this is just in a big city close to us, they're about to shut their doors because the giving has gone so far down since COVID. You know, and they're located in a really high dollar area of this major city. But, you know, this podcast isn't about, you know, showiness, right? It's about the listener. It's about you. It's about helping you. It's about helping you grow in your understanding of God, what your purpose is, and encouraging you to go make a difference and to be a part of the resistance against the things that would tear down our marriages, you know, like I shared earlier, you know, our families and even our nation. And like I've said before, your strength is so needed. And being honest with you, so is your support. You know, we want to grow this in such a way where, you know, I can go back and speak at churches and events without asking for a fee. And that is a huge step of faith, but I really believe it's where God has me right now. And I wouldn't be asking for this on the podcast if I didn't think that God was going to show up. I had to humble myself, and God affirmed it. Yes, you need to be able to lean on others, just like when he sent the disciples out. You know, go to these people to make sure that they can help you with your food and housing, whatever you're going to be needing. So the other thing I want to do is I want to put together a curriculum. That call today, what I had with this gentleman, we were talking about, you know, the teaching that I'm doing. And another man from that same event said, "Do you have a curriculum for what you've been doing here?" Just like the guy from Promise Keepers, the president said, "Brent, this is some of the most powerful teaching that was at the retreat I've ever heard." I have never put this in curriculum form, and it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of effort. But we really believe this is where God is moving us to, and that's probably why some of these things have slowed down so that we can focus on getting a curriculum out there to see men's lives changed. And what I want to put in there, it changed everything in my life. I mean, everything. And I want to see others changed as well. You know, the other thing that you can be doing is you can go to the website, which is unleash.men, and you can click on that. There's a donate thing on there. It'll take you to the 501c3 I'm connected to. It's World Renewal. And you hit the donate button, it'll help you support the ministry. Like I said, it's a 501c3, so it is tax deductible. And I'll make sure when I do the link, when I put this out on social media, that I attach that link, you know, into the podcast. And the other thing you can do is you can support us by joining the Unleash Plus. You know, maybe you're not wanting to do a one-time or a monthly donation. Maybe you just want to join something which is connected to the podcast. And, you know, if you do sign up for the yearly, you get the free Unleashed t-shirt to go with it. But everyone, regardless, will get the End of the Wilds audiobook for free. You'll get, like, small group studies we're putting together to go with these episodes. There's, for you guys that love hunting, there's Whitetail Wisdom episodes. There's prizes we're doing every single month. But, you know, what's the plus for me in asking for your support? I get to walk in humility. You know, I get to see God at work. I get to trust Him. You know, I was reading this and going back through my own story, and I've seen God's hand at work this whole time. From very beginning, when my mother would say, "Honey, there's nothing you can't do if God is in it." And I wouldn't trade anything in my life. I've had some amazing opportunities. And so when I was thinking that my hopes and dreams were crushed, no. You know, any adventure that's worth living is going to have, you know, those pitfalls. There's going to be battles that you're going to have to fight. There's going to be mountains that you're going to have to climb. But at the end of the day, when we do that and we stick with it no matter what, we see the glory of God. You know, where is your faith right now? Are you worried about trusting God with what He's got for your future? I want to invite you to get on your knees. And I want you to reach out to God and say, "God, I need you. I need your strength. I need your vision. I want to do and be who you've called me to be." And then I want you to get on your feet, and I want you to get things started. You know, I can't wait to share with you with what God is going to be doing, you know, through this ministry, through your prayers, through your support, and we'll keep you posted on that. And like I always say, your strength is needed. I hope you know you are loved. I hope you know you are appreciated. And Eric, I appreciate you doing this every single week. And I want you to know that it is essential to get this message of Jesus out there. We'll see you next time.